It is 4 o'clock and we call the March 16th meeting of the Rogers Water and Sewer Commission to order. The first item we have, I'm just going to go over that. I've seen one. I know we normally have public forum, but Jim here wishes to address the board commission. All right, we're going to the next item is action on the minutes. We have minutes that were sent out to us. It's the February the 17th. Minutes.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Let me back up just a second. I want to welcome a new commission member. Derek, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us today. Derek Morgan is our newest commission member. This is used to having Travis down that way. And it's nice to have you with us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go ahead and move on into the meeting. Our first will be the financial reports.
Well, good afternoon. This will be our report for the month of February. And you'll notice that it looks a little bit different following our conversations from last month. I suppose at the end you can tell me if you like it or not. But this will be a little test here, a pilot project. We'll start with actuals versus budget. At the end of February, 8 months of the way through our fiscal year, we say our benchmark is 67%, 8 divided by 12. So in the water department, revenues and expenses are both trending under that benchmark, revenues at 62%, expenses at 63%. And our capital outlay year-to-date in the water department is 38% of what we budgeted. In the sewer department, revenues are trending over the benchmark at 70%, expenses at 62%, and our sewer capital outlay is 35% of budget. Now for the first of many line charts, we show here in dollars the capital outlay. So first, the water capital outlay, I mentioned it's 38% of budget. So that's the solid black line there shows you that year to date we've spent $4.1 million. And the dotted line there is just a straight line showing our budgeted water capital outlay for the year. So you can see visually, we're well under what we had projected or expected to spend in terms of water capital projects. It is still tracking above our outlay in the water department in the two prior years. I'll just note, you see a little bit of a dip here from May to June in FY 2025, which looks a little bit curious. There was two things contributing to that. We disposed a number of water meter asset records that not any longer represent assets really in the ground. Those needed to come off our books. They weren't fully depreciated. That resulted in some expensing in the month of June, along with some construction in progress projects that we ultimately decided needed to be expensed instead of capitalized. Just a little anecdote there. And on the sewer side, it's a very similar chart. We said that we're 35% of budget. It's well under that dotted line there. Year to date, though, we've spent $16.7 million still. And you can see that's above our sewer outlay in FY24 and FY2025. So that's our big outlay, is what we spend on capital projects. If you look at money coming in, we can look at billed revenue and consumption. So for the water department, billed revenue in total for February was $1.4 million. Compared to February of the prior year, it's basically unchanged, a 0.2% increase. Looking at billed revenue related to residential, commercial, and industrial water consumption, it was up 6.8% year over year, while water consumption itself was up 4.3%. On the sewer side, billed revenue in total was $1.9 million. That's a 14% increase over the prior February. If you just look at sewer consumption, that billed revenue is up 20%, while sewer consumption itself is up 3.8%. And then for our charts here, water billed consumption on the year is at $12.7 million. So again, we're looking at residential, commercial, industrial, the big contributors, right? $12.7 million. And then in parentheses, I show you where we are relative to budget as of February. And you can see here, this is really the only chart in the memo now that's not a straight line projection for budget. And that's just a function of how we put together the budget in FY26. It was a four-year average, basically, of the monthly data adjusted for the rate increases that we've had over that time period. So that allows us to sort of show that there's a steeper curve here in the summer and fall months when you've got irrigation, and then it flattens out a little bit into winter and spring months there. So this does take into account seasonality. We can see that we're tracking under budget, but ahead of where we were in FY24 and FY25. That's the water side. On the sewer side, it looks a little bit better. Year to date, we're at $13.7 million of billed consumption. That's $440,000 ahead of our budget projection at this point during the fiscal year. And it's also above our historicals collected for the two prior years. Access and impact fee revenues, we collected $120,000 this month. Our total is $1.17 million at 36% of the $3.2 million we collected last year. It's 24% of our FY26 budget. We've been monitoring that for a little while. It's still trending under. At this point, we've got 4 months left, right, to try to get closer to our budgeted number. On a related note, year-to-date income, access and impact fees are contributing to that. Also contributing to year-to-date income now is contributed capital. So when we talk about contributed capital, we're talking about those assets, that infrastructure that developers and contractors build and then convey over to RWU for perpetuity. That is recorded as an asset on our books. It contributes to our net position. It now contributes to our revenue as well. And so we show that contributed capital. We had finally a big month after not much activity there this fiscal year. We had over $1 million worth in both water and sewer. For that reason, we see net income sort of spiking up here from January to February. We see it for the water department. Year to date, we're at $5.9 million net income. That's 60% of budget. So again, it's under that budgeted line there. We'd be at 67% as our benchmark, right? And it's sort of in between FY24 and FY25. And then on sewer net income, we're at, right at $8 million. That's above budget, 86% of budget. And again, right between FY24 and FY25. Finally, for cash reserves, this is an important context, right? Because net income, we know, includes those non-cash things like contributed capital. We need to show that, but we also, for context, need to be aware of our cash position. And down here, we see that restricted and unrestricted water funds are $31.2 million in the sewer fund. Restricted and unrestricted cash is $30.1 million. If you look at your line charts there for the water department, you can see that $31.2 million is ahead of where we expected to be at this point in the fiscal year. You can see that dotted line there representing our budgeted cash position goes down because we expected to spend more on water capital projects and expected our cash position to be decreasing over the course of the fiscal year. That's not really happened so far at this point. You can see visually that we're actually and a little stronger position cash-wise than when we started the year back over here in July. So we're ahead of where we thought we might be. We're also ahead of where we were in FY24 and FY25. And then coming down here to the sewer department, you can see that we're at $30 million. That's $8.5 million better than where we expected to be. My note up here at the top as an additional explanation notes that we had a $5.5 million draw from our 2024 series debt. So that's through the ANRC. We didn't get that money all at once. We are reimbursing ourselves for those capital outlays at the pollution control facility as we work through that project there. So we spent that money in January, and then we got the money back from the ANRC in February. So of course that contributes to our long-term debt. That's money we're going to have to pay back at some point. But for now, it improves our cash position to the tune of $5.5 million. And for that reason, you see that big jump there on the sewer side. One more note here is that that small dotted line at the bottom, you can see the legend there, that's our required minimum reserves. So that's another helpful piece of context. It's not just what's our cash doing, but what's it doing in relation to what you as a governing body have said we need to keep on hand, right? And you can see that for now we're well above that. And then at this point, we just go into the other attachments that we normally include in our monthly financials. So that's my test project for you.
I like it.
I do too. I think you're getting positive feedback. I think it was well done. I like it. I think the way it lays out kind of gives you that visual. So I think it's well done. So
I like it because it focuses less on what is net income doing this month compared to the same month a year ago. You made the point in our last meeting that it's a full fiscal year and we have an audit once a year and a lot can happen over the course of a year. So to try to focus on the nitty-gritty detail of why we didn't accrue some salaries in a given month, that's a level of detail that I just felt like we probably didn't need to be addressing here on a monthly basis. But if I can give you just a visual of how we're tracking for the fiscal year and some historical context to go along with that, just makes it a little bit easier to digest, I think, and hopefully gives you an adequate picture of where we are financially.
Gives us good information. Okay. Any questions or comments?
So the access and impact fees, that's a pretty dramatic slowdown. Do we think that's the economy, or do we think things are coming online, or is it Bentonville getting the Walton grant, but nothing can happen yet?
I'll let engineering chime in if they've got anything to say on that. What I have heard from my colleagues is that they're all still good, active projects. Like, nothing significant has come off the list, and we're not going to get that anymore. It's just, for whatever reason, it's taken a little bit longer than we expected.
We've started to put together some spreadsheets kind of tracking and forecasting when those impact fees and access fees are going to hit. We didn't feel like we quite had that ready to present this month, but what it's looking like is we may very well be a little bit under budget on impact and access fees for the year, but I don't think we're in bad shape as what's indicated on this bar graph here. So we'll try to have that ready for you.
A couple of just thoughts. And I think each month we talk about this a little bit. And some of that was the question was, is the timing? And obviously there is timing involved in that. And then I think when we ask the question, when you build a budget based upon what you think is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And again, timing could be a factor in that. If we do fall short of the budget, my question to you all is would be kind of twofold. One is, if you're not going to hit that number, is it going to impact anything else? Will we need to make any other adjustments? Okay. Because that was part of what we thought we were going to bring in. So that'd be one. As you put that together and as you look at it, it may not happen within the year, but it's probably going to happen. It just falls into the next year. Don't know if there's any that triggers that you have to pull up from a balancing to the budget. I guess that's the kind of first, because really it's going to probably happen. It just isn't going to happen.
To answer your question, yes, when we start budgeting, we'll probably be a little more conservative next year. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is timing. To Janae's comment, it's time. These are already projects that are started. We're watching them. So the timing is the issue. But we're seeing some other things like project start, plan review, excuse me, plan review, and yes, that'll probably affect how we budget those next year.
From another perspective, like if we were the city and we had governmental funds, they're required to present in their financial statements a budget to actuals schedule.
True.
We're proprietary funds, enterprise funds, we don't have that same requirement. Okay. So if our budget to actuals doesn't quite work out the way that we expected, there's nothing that really holds us to that. And so that's why I think, yes, good to look at net income, but then also look at your cash reserves as well. And between the two, you pretty much have the information that you need to know, well, how serious is this, right? If our net income is not what we expected it to be, the real question for me is what's our cash position as well. But we're also monitoring our debt service coverage ratio, especially as we get into, as we'll talk about later, some additional long-term debt. That's something that we're not only looking at, but our underwriter is going to be looking at as well, helping us manage. And that's something that we looked at in our rate study as well. You know, the best you can do is make some assumptions over a 5 or 10 year time horizon. But those assumptions tell us that over that horizon, we're going to be in good shape, and we've got the rate structure adopted to ensure that we're in good shape going forward.
Any other questions, comments on finances? Well done. Thank you.
Okay.
We will now move to the engineer report.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Happy to say that Palmer Street is substantially complete after about 5 years of, Let's see. What's our password here? Thank you. I don't know if I kill something or
you gotta watch those engineers.
After about 5 years, we're substantially complete with Poplar. It's been a big project, a big downtown project, and so nearly all of this corridor has new water and sewer under it, and this also completed one of our capital improvement projects that was outlined in our master plan to loop some 12-inch all the way over to Arkansas Street. So. They're still doing some punch list items in the field, but water and sewer is substantially complete there, and the corridor is looking really good.
I would think the merchants are pleased.
Yes, definitely. Solids handling, there's still a lot of activity at the site. Nearly every trade you can imagine is out there working. We did receive the hoppers and got those set into place, and those will still require some adjustments. Get them in the right spot. Still working on the dryer assembly, still having parts trickle in from North Carolina and Germany to get that thing assembled. So the contractor's kind of been moving from one to the other, doing what they can. The sludge lines going into the mixing box. They're still working on some yard piping outside. Overall, moving forward pretty well. Some minor issues that we're working through, but moving forward. So. For our water transmission main project, if you remember, several months ago, the commission approved a design amendment for us to have a company, Aestis, come out and do some electrical resistivity testing to try to determine if there was any karst formations present. So we got some of the data back from that analysis. And what you see on the right-hand side of the screen is just cross-sections that basically show the presence of different soil densities and groundwater and void spaces. And so, in general, those areas that are shown in purple are the areas that we're trying to avoid. That would be like gravelly material, high high probability of groundwater flow going through it, which would be determined to be, you know, likely karst formation. And so based on some of these cross sections that were done in this overall survey, it was proposed that we adjust our alignment up to about 100 feet in some places going across this particular parcel. So we're moving forward with that recommendation, and we've released Garver to finalize that design through this section. And so they'll be working through that in the next month, and we will resume easement acquisition once that alignment's complete. And the project status, pre-design concept, we're still in the selection process. Hopefully we'll be bringing you some proposals to perform that design work pretty soon. In design, I added a couple of these in here. These are smaller projects we've kind of been working on in-house. South 12th Street sewer main extension. This is a sewer reroute for the house that was being built over one of our sewer lines. And they'll be starting that construction work here in the next week or so. Walnut Street sewer main extension from 1st to 2nd Street. We've been trying to figure out some solutions to provide sewer along that corridor. We've been fighting some other utilities in there as far as trying to figure out how to get around some telecommunications duct banks and stuff like that. And, you know, of course, anytime we're disturbing the bricks, it's kind of a big deal. So it's kind of a sensitive project, but we spent enough time on it. I felt like it needed to make the list here. So just adding that project in there. We do have our sanitary sewer improvements from Chateau to 24th Street out to bid. That's currently being advertised. And under construction, of course, we had the Highway 12 waterline replacement and the Blossom Way emergency sewer repairs. Technically under construction, hasn't started work yet. And then, of course, as I mentioned before, West Poplar has been completed. As far as what Jared was mentioning with the, with us being where we're at with the capital improvement projects, I think there's several things. The timing of several of these projects have contributed to that, and that would be this Blossom Way sewer from Pauline Whitaker to Dixieland. If you recall, that is a legal case between us and the Lindsay property. And so we're basically ready to go out to bid on that one once that issue is resolved. The Chateau sewer project, we intended to get that out to bid in the fall. We've kind of been waiting on some easements and some other things on that project. Same thing with Highway 12 and the Blossom Way emergency sewer repairs. These three projects have just kind of been lagging behind. So we are still planning to spend that money. And now we've kind of got that insight now that we're either out to bid or under construction on those three projects. The Blossom Way sewer on the sewer side, that's going to be a big one. That's going to be substantial. So. Plan review, we ticked up a little bit this month. We reviewed 113 set of plans, up from, I believe, 105 last month. And so I was now polling some of our plan review staff today, and they tell me it's looking pretty busy for the next 3 weeks. I think they've got concept meetings lined up, which, you know, usually they're about a week or two out. So they do see a lot of things coming down the pike. I was hoping to get you guys a little bit better data on some of these bar charts. You know, exactly where we're seeing, you know, this trend down. That's going to take a little bit more manual effort than I hoped it would. So hopefully we'll be able to parse that out a little bit better in the future. But I think you'll see this ticking up a little bit over the next couple of months. I've got some plan review detail for you there. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Commission members, any questions, comments, engineering?
Good, thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, sir.
Next item, Rogers Pollution Control Facility.
And while I've been in here, some of you may not know, my name is David Stibe. I'm the assistant manager out at the treatment plant. I got Todd in the audience, but I couldn't convince him to stand up here.
Here I am. See Todd out there as well.
So obviously these are our permit values that we're achieving each month, and you can see that we were well within our limits for the month of February. Still, I can go into a little on the report on the these other reports here. We'll talk a little bit more about what we might be seeing an uptick from, but if I can figure out how to make this go down. So our industrial pretreatment activities for February, Paul and Amber did control monitoring for Chicken Quick and Tyson's at Rogers, just based on some issues they were having with some equipment on site. There's, for the month of February, there's $23,817 in surcharges, bringing the total for the budget year up to $163,204.57. You can see Ozark Mountain Poultry had a CBOD loading violation this month, slightly over their limit. They're putting in some new pretreatment equipment, and that's why they had the issue. During the last half of February, Tyson Chicken Quick was having a problem with the recirculation pump on their dissolved air flotation unit, which allowed them to add some extra solids to our inventory, and we've been working through that with the dryer for the last couple of weeks, and trying to get a handle on that.
The Southeast Poultry. Who is Southeast Poultry? Didn't ring a bell to me. I didn't go back to look. Southeast. My fault in going back. That was a pretty heavy number. It didn't ring a bell to me. Southeast Poultry or SE Poultry. Oops.
It's over by the ball.
Yeah, it's over by the ball.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I dismissed the name thinking. Oh, I do know the smell, but I didn't know.
Our fog inspection report, there's 31 known pumping locations. Amber's feeling like that was probably closer to 45. Oil and grace results for the establishment that had to replace some of their inlet lines were at 110 milligrams per liter. She's been working with multiple food trucks, changing out an upgraded secondary holding tank, and haulers have reached out to verify changes or ask questions. Since their wastewater disposal sites are attached to their grease interceptors, they're going to review building plans and let me know. The pizza place grease interceptor was not at normal levels, and she's been working with them to try to get that corrected. There was also some issues with some lids at that same location. And it appears that all other inspections were normal. They did collect an oil and grease at the police control facility this past month, and they're going to catch some more at some food establishments. And Paul and her both worked on control monitoring that I mentioned in the report for Chicken Quick and Tyson's Rogers after installing some new equipment on those sites.
Let me ask you a quick question.
Yes, sir.
Again, not too deep in this business. Okay. I'm not having the best luck of collecting some of the samples. Is that equipment-wise? Is it just, I kind of jumped out at me trying to sampling.
I should have done my due diligence.
Is there equipment there?
Amber.
And it's not a trick question. I just wondered, she said new sampling. I was just curious on that one. If we needed.
My assumption is because it mentions a new sampling pole in March, that she was having trouble reaching where she needed to get that sample.
She's got whatever equipment that would be needed. Okay. All right.
Todd may be able to elaborate on that more, but...
She asked me for a new sampling pole, and I gave her permission to go ahead and order it. So it was pretty insignificant. She has more. She didn't tell me that she was having trouble. She just asked me if she could do one. I said, let's get it. So I assume that is right, that she's having trouble. Actually, some of the interceptors are deeper than others, especially the newer designs. They have more vertical depth than more horizontal. I think she may be having trouble.
Okay. You're taking care of it. Thank you.
We've recently received a Chicken Quick engineering proposal for review after the in-person meeting to review the technical aspect we need to see. That was concerning some new equipment that they had installed with some issues that we had back in the fall. Work continues on our solids project as well as our skated redeployment project. Our grinders for our dryer operation are looking like it may be easier to do a complete replacement rather than do a rebuild on those. So I know Sean and Todd and I are still working on which way we need to go with that, which is the best route for the plant. We have been interviewing for a new operator this past week. We're ready to make an offer. Hopefully, within a couple of weeks, we'll be fully staffed in the operations again, fully staffed at the plant, actually. And right before Todd went in for surgery, he got to do a tour for NWAC. I think it was a science group or biology group that was out there. I don't know, there was probably 15 of them.
Yeah, 15 plus
the professor. We treated 269.5 million gallons in February, based on our normal daily flow of 9.6. Looks like we treated approximately 17.5 million gallons due to rainwater. Obviously, January and February were real dry months. We only recorded right at a quarter of an inch over two events at February. Obviously, there's still a little issue with water there, just based on, you know, quarter inch is not a lot. So there may potentially be some inflow from a creek or something, you know, in our system still. So I'm sure we'll be looking for that. I think that's any questions?
Good report. Thank you for
Thank
being
you.
Here. Thank you. Okay. Next item on reports, operations report.
So first, I've got a few things we'll cover today, but the first thing we're going to cover is where, if you were coming in, you saw the van out here. We're actually in the process of doing some rebranding. That's our camera van sitting out there, so you can see, not a camera van, I'm sorry, our leak location van. And you can see we put what they do and what they're doing out there, so if somebody opens the window and looks out, you know, they're going to be able to know what's being done and who's out there. Another reason we're doing this is because, you know, we no longer are buying the red vehicles because they're so hard to get. You know, I mean, they're going out a year and a half before we can even get them. The white ones, you know, we pretty well just go and pick them up off of a car lot somewhere. Often, you know, as long as they meet the state procurement and stuff. So, and this one will be our next one. It is the new camera van. It will go into the shop next week to have the wrap put on it. And then also our one-ton trucks. We got one-tons out there now that's white. We'll be in the process of doing those, but we'll be actually wrapping the back end of them, the work beds in the back, with kind of the same logo kind of thing there and telling what they do and everything. So And so if
I can say sorry,
yeah.
The field team came up with all this. We just said, hey, if you look out the window, can you identify what we're doing? And you know, in this day and age with all the things going on, you don't want to see a band that this looks kind of suspicious, right? So we've got these big blank white canvases and we want to use it. But with that process, they took it and just ran with it and just knocked it up.
That's good.
I'm glad you didn't show the sewer line on the sewer inspection.
Oh, well, we haven't yet. No.
Maybe we need to.
Like the wrap. I mean, again, I think the conversion, I mean, those of us that have been around here a while, we're so used to seeing the red trucks and identify with the water. But again, challenge of getting the red trucks and, I mean, conversion to a white with this wrap, I think, looks good. And I'm assuming that, you know, again, most all of them have some paint on those to identify as our game. I think it's those guys. It's well done. Very good team.
And then, you know, we've been talking about the H2S out at the Garrett Road lift station. So this is back from December. You can see that we had spikes up there, a little over 250 milligrams per liter spike there. And then we had, you know, right under 250. Then around 225 in January. Right, that was
Johnny.
No, that's what, I'm sorry. That was the end of November. Ended. Or.
Tell me what I'm seeing.
Okay.
Tell me, all right.
Yes, sir.
I see it.
Okay.
Just tell me what I'm seeing.
So what we got down here is this is when our pumps are cycling on and off, you know, and what we've done is we've used different things. So. You know, we got a junkie pump in there. We've put an aerator in there. We've run city water over to it, so we're dumping water out of a flushing station into a manhole, so we're adding water to it. So here what you're seeing, the end of November, 1st of December there, you know, we was just running the jockey pump and we were spiking. You know, before we was at 800 parts per million. And then we added the jockey pump, and that brought it down. We were still having those odor problems at First Baptist Church and in that neighborhood over there around Millwood and First Baptist Church on Pleasant Grove Road. So we continued to do more research and do other things, you know, but here the initial one is with the jockey pump. And you can see, if you could get in closer, you can see where the VFDs started and stopped the pumps and all that, but we'd have to make it so large it's hard to see. Then we get into January and we'd actually drop these down, as I said, into the 80s and the 90s and the spikes have seemed to spread out a little bit for us. Then we get into to January and here we're using the aerator to run air in just by itself with the water. And then we get into this month, this year, not too long ago. We're down. We had one spike so far this month, up just a little bit over 50. What we done after that one was we went in, we turned off the jockey pump. We have not been running the jockey pump. Our SCADA team had went in and narrowed our pump cycles, and so we're pumping a little bit quicker, and we're trying to flush that out. And we feel too with the aerator that's in there that we're continuously running that aerator and we're adding air to it, that we're changing that water in the lift station from anaerobic to aerobic. And that has been getting pushed further down the line through this time. We think it's eating that slime layer off of those, off of that force main. So we're still dumping water in, but we're not doing it every day like we were. We only do it on Friday through Sunday. So, because we're not trusting all the data that we're getting right now, but, we don't want to have a incident at the church where they turn on the fans and it sucks in the sewer gas smell. We haven't got any of the complaints from the neighborhood out there either, you know, with some sewer smells in the house and stuff like that that's going back up through the P traps. But so hopefully, you know, that's just a problem area for us out there. You know, we got about 7,000 feet forest land. Yeah. So, you know, 12-inch forest main that's carrying that sewer and just sitting in there and turning anaerobic, and, you know, now we're adding more dissolved oxygen to it. So we feel we're on the right track. Now, you know, cold weather helps us also. we'll really see, you know, if we can keep this up through the summer. But, you know, what we're seeing now is a positive for us. You know, we're seeing those numbers change. You know, we barely got over 10 parts per million there. So still not safe for our guys to go in and work until we've in it. But, you know, we're getting a lot closer. So
what's the goal, Johnny, when you're looking at it, when the smell is just really bad, what's the...
You're looking about that 50 parts per million.
That's 50?
And higher.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's, you'd really want it down.
We really want it down. We probably would not want to go over 30 at the most.
Got it. So it spikes up there occasionally. Yeah. Well, I appreciate y'all working on it. I know we've you know, it's one of those that's really hard to put your hands, you know, your arms around figuring out exactly what is causing it and how to fix it. Well, we can figure out what causes it, just how to fix it.
Yeah. You know, we went as far as, you know, testing, because we got a couple other lift stations that dump in with that lifts into the Garrett Road. Well, one that dumps into the Garrett Road. And then we got, you know, Lakewood that dumps down on the forest main, down a little further on the forest main. And, you know, we went even as far back into checking all of those and data logging all those, being sure odor logger those to be sure that we didn't have odors coming from those or the gases and stuff, and, you know, they all of those tested fine. So,
are you guys accounting for the water that you're dumping in there?
Yes, it's through a meter.
Okay.
Yeah. Our flush stations, it's like, you know, help control our THMs throughout town. We got a couple of flush stations out on that end of town by Buffalo Wild Wings and up one up by Water Tower Park for Benville. Where we used to connect and we don't anymore, you know, that water will get in there and it'll use up our THM, we'll get some THMs. So we have those already in our system. So all of it's metered, you know, and we flush those lines when we're going to pull samples but all that water is metered.
Johnny, I'm not sure I understand all this, but I do have, the question I have is that area, so I'm thinking about the First Adventist Church, I think about some of the plans that, you know, for the old Mills Farm, there's quite a bit that they recently had been approved for a lot more housing. We're going to continue to see a lot of growth. So my general thought is, well, if we're having trouble now, when we put in another huge subdivision, we continue to grow in that area, how does the problem get better or does it get worse? So I guess that...
Brian, you want to answer that?
I know that the Mills Farm will be developed at some point. I don't know if that flows toward the church, if it flows down, you know, I'm not sure how it goes, but the lay of the land moves down Boston Way Creek. But there was, I think, just within the last couple of months, wasn't there a fairly large project that was approved just to the north of Silo Falls, and that would be pretty darn close to the church. So if our 12-inch line isn't carrying it now, does it get better with time?
Yeah. So that Garrett Road lift station was designed to accommodate the build-out of basically the whole south end of Rogers.
Okay.
Generally south of Wallace Road, and everything along that latitude is going to go to Garrett Road. Right now, we're at somewhere around half build out in that basin, and so it's not at capacity. It's well below its capacity. We also have Crescent Heights lift station that pumps into the Garrett Road lift station's wet well, and so by the time it gets there, we've already got old super, right? We have Lakewood that's almost built out. I think that is built out.
It is built out, yeah.
And then that's contributing to the force main. So, you know, the idea is that once all this build out happens and that lift station is operating more near its capacity, those pumps are going to cycle more frequently and keep that water fresher, as fresh as wastewater can be, going, you know, up through the force main instead of just sitting there and going septic. That's why we're having to add flushing water to it right now to try to keep it fresh.
And I think I follow most all of that. The other thing I would say is that from our original plan, what we thought that would be developed, I see more density in some areas. Does that play into it as well? Yeah, I know you said we're at capacity, but at one point we looked at this and said it's going to be this. Oh, well, by the way, now density is going where density is being driven. And out there, it looked like that was pretty dense in terms of some of that mills development. So
it's still scrappy flow out.
It'll line up. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
that'll flow to the north. And we've got a couple months ago, we approved an engineering contract with McClellan. That's going to take care of some of that downstream sewer, where we are anticipating some capacity issues.
Okay.
And so that should let it flow more freely downstream, because right now we've got a couple of little spots where we're seeing some surcharging, and it might limit the ability to move those gases through the system. And so, in effect, you trap some gases near the top of the hill, which unfortunately is right where
the bottom line is, we just got to keep this thing moving.
Right.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Development is actually.
It's a good
thing. I think I got it. Okay. So the more we have, the more we keep it moving, it doesn't settle.
Okay.
Yep. What else you got?
So one thing that we're doing, another thing we're doing here at the utility is that we're trying to, we looked at, a few years ago, I was looking at trying to, a way for us to be able to communicate with our new people coming in, with our SOPs. You know, they come in and, they'll sign an SOP and say that they understand what it means and everything, you know, well, so what we wanted to do, as I've done some research, was it's for our SOPs, it's more along the guidelines, you know, we all carry a cell phone now. We all got a tablet. Our guys do, you know. That we have these SOPs and we have training, or, you know, had all of our SOPs on there that they could look at. And what we did was we also filmed those SOPs, you know, like the harnesses and how to hook the harnesses up, put the harnesses on, you know, I think this last week or the week before, we shot the video of, you know, lowering somebody down into a manhole. You know, we had to get some new equipment there because one of our tripods had failed before we could shoot that video. So we got all of that. So we're turning all these SOPs also into training videos. And what these training did, what we figured out as we was going through doing the SOPs was, man, we can take these and do so much more with them. And we're shooting the videos ourselves. We actually got one of our employees that goes around and shoots the videos. He edits them, does the edit on them. And him and David work together on that. So again, you know, we wanted our policies that we'd set up before with our SOPs, because we just a few years ago had rewritten our safety manual here because it was outdated. And so when we was doing that, we was like, okay, our next step is to do the SOPs. Well, as I said, these guys, they just sign them, probably don't even read them, so we wanted it to be more of them to have more value in it, more input into it, because we wanted these policies to be something that's got people home safely every day, just not something they broke their name on. Leadership through ownership, what we did, we invited the employees to help build the training. We do now have a safety committee
here at the utility that, you know, we got one from each department, engineering, you know, field. We don't have anybody from the front office, but they participate, you know, and we we come up with these things. They come in monthly or every 2 months. We do a safety meeting, and we talk about safety issues here at the utility and how to do them. So, again, we wanted our ownership to replace that concept of just, okay, I'm going to sign my name and we're going to be done. We wanted them to buy into it. We wanted them to protect it and everything. So again, we started the videos. We're showing them in our bi-weekly meetings. You know, we try to have a safety meeting every bi-week. You know, and we review them together. We'll even let them review them beforehand, some of them, you know, just if there's anything that they want to take from it or add it. You know, it started these employees just volunteering ideas, you know, hey, let's do this, what about this, you know, kind of thing. And so they're really buying into it. Then, you know, the bloopers shared, laughing result, you know, we share the bloopers too, that, you know, I just want to show you a little clip of some of the things that we're doing that we showed at our district meeting last week at, and I was like, okay, now show them the school version. We had some guys go do a program at the school on a Friday, or did I show them the one I showed at the district meeting? So I liked it to do the one for the district meeting since it has the bloopers and stuff in it. But we also started building camaraderie in between the teams and stuff, you know, and we started to see a culture shift there that with our guys, you know, where all of them were getting along, you know, for the vans and our trucks that we're going to have. We actually had the gentleman that we had before shoot all the pictures out here on the wall. He come in, they did a day photo shoot out at the water towers, you know, and we got pictures of the guys, you know, cracking around and doing different things out there. But then what we did, we actually took it one step further. We reinvented our onboarding, you know, as what we're doing is we're shooting these videos, we're recording these videos. And now, you know, we got new hires that's coming in. You know, they're going to see more, you know, the tapes we bought, they're just kind of generic. They're just over, like, construction. But it's not what we all do. It's like nerd work and things like that, you know, the videos that we have. So they're kind of generic, you know. So what we're doing now is we're going to take and go through and write all this SOP. We're doing all the SOP work, and then we're doing all of the videos for training and safety. And then when these new hires are coming in, you know, they're getting to see people that they're actually going to work with in the field in these videos. Plus, it's going to give them a better understanding, you know, of what we do on a daily basis, whether they're on the sewer crew, whether they're on the water crews. You know, we're breaking down each video for those departments. And it's introducing them to their crews or the equipment that they'll work with on a daily basis. And I think, David, you know, we put that up there at the top. I mean, I think, you know, that's where we want to be now, you know, is, you know, we just don't want them to think that they're starting a job. We want them to start a career here. You know, we have to invest a lot in employees with school and all the safety stuff and all the PPEs. But, you know, we want them to be looking for a career here, just not a job. And another thing that it has done for us, it helped us bridge the field in the front office, you know, it's closing that knowledge gap. Because, you know, the girls in the front office, they are the ones that talk to the customers more than we do. You know, me and Brent get the problem ones, you know, the ones that's ugly and mean and nasty. But they're the ones, you know, every day talking about their RPZs, their water services, their water meters, and everything else. So what we're doing now is, you know, you'll see on our videos, they walk through a complete water installation. So the ladies know they're talking about the tap, where it is, where we make the tap. tap on the line, you know, what the curb stop, what the the inlet and everything is on the water surface, you know, so they know all of this. So, and then we're doing some RPZs, we're walking through those. We're also setting it up where our meters are not, you know, we won't set a meter. We got video on that now. So when they're talking to the customer, and the customer says, well, they didn't set my meter because of this, and they look at it, our explanations on it, they can say, okay, this is why. So, you know, we used to draw little things on tissues and maps and papers and everything else, you know, and the coffee gets spilled on it or something, you know, that goes away. But now they'll have these videos too that they can watch everything that we do. So looking ahead, what we want to do is, you know, we want to expand this into public communication. You know, we've talked about, I haven't talked to Jerry about it yet, but you know, we want to create like some of the utilities that we're kind of mirroring some of this after, you know, they got YouTube videos that a customer can go on the website, click on that YouTube video, you know, and see, you know, where their shutoffs are in case of an emergency. Instead of calling us saying, hey, I got a house flooding, can you get out here and shut the meter off? They should know how to do it. Pressure concerns, you know, we get those all the time. Why is my pressure, you know, and I have to ask, okay, what part of town you live in? Well, more than likely it's your pressure regulator. You know, it's failing. But we're going to map that out so those pressures are there. You know, private leak awareness, where the leak is inside the meter box, whether it's on RW, which helps the ladies up front, but also the customer, you know, where this leak is located at. And then, you know, just some other things like what happens here in a main break. But we want to expand that into that public communication there. And let's see if I can get this. So this is like a, what do you call it, David?
Montage.
A montage.
I didn't anticipate that this is going to be shown. Maybe that was good.
Mark where their infrastructure is on the ground. As you can see here, we have Lawrence, which is communication. apartments on the ground.
They've been covering a 20 each.
Doc Gould,
And like I said, we have that wide range of videos from all of those. That's just, you know, little clips out of every one of them. But when we get them done, if y'all would like to have a copy of it and see what we do, we'd be happy to share those copies with you. When we talk about the other Little Rock, the Little Rock. Okay. So leading into Jerry's, not this Saturday, but the Saturday before, I went to Little Rock to a cybersecurity meeting down there with the Arkansas National Guard, the U.S. Army, and the Air Force. Mainly I was kind of brought down to, they wanted to run through scenarios and ask us what we would do in this scenario as they were trying to build a case study down there for that. As I come back and told Jerry, I said, I wish I'd touched somebody from IT with me, and I wish I'd touched somebody from SCADA with me. Cybersecurity now is a high point for all of the nation in the utility industry. That Friday night before I went up, went to Little Rock, President Trump had moved water and wastewater to number 4 on the critical infrastructure list because of something that happened at one of the top 5 cities in the United States. It's still not out in the news. I don't know how they're keeping it out of the news, but something happened there on a Friday morning. Like I said, so what the National Guard is doing is, they have been given so much equipment now to come in and help. Like if we were under a cyber attack and ransom, they come in with this equipment, this advanced equipment that they've got, and help our IT department reestablish the SCADA or whatever has been ransomware or whatever's going on with our utility. It starts, but as we went through there was so many more things that come to light. And mainly they were looking at maybe helping the smaller cities. They figure us bigger cities kind of have our stuff together. There's a few that don't, but and that was what this this workshop was towards, to build that scenario for like a smaller utility. They want to know how we would attack that or how we would handle that within our system. There's other things that other, there was 4 utilities down there, us, Fort Smith, Little Rock Water Reclamation, and the CAW. We all brought up different things, because they asked us what our number one fear was, I'm not going to say it. And they thought we would say cybersecurity. None of us did. Cybersecurity is high on our list too, but we trust our IT department. It was the other that really kind of opened their eyes, to what, I don't think they realized what was going through our minds to keep us up at late at night, all 4 of us kind of said the same thing, in a different manner or a different layout there. Like I said, I know Jerry's fixing to give one on cybersecurity, but I can tell you, like I said, this is at the forefront of everybody's minds right now. With everything that's going on, it's on ours. We've increased our camera footage, our camera stuff, picking up stuff out around the water towers right now. We've done things on our side to go along with what Jerry's doing on his side to be sure that we're keeping our infrastructure as safe as we possibly can.
John,
any other questions?
Thank you. Good job.
A lot of information. It's all good stuff. And I think the tagline is not a job, it's a career.
Yeah.
I mean, at every business, how do you think about that? It's just, some people look at it as just a job.
But y'all are trying to build teamwork. You're trying to build a program that you start here, you can work here as long as you want. So I think it's all very possible.
You're like David, 40-something years.
Hey, Johnny, real quick. So I assume y'all are tracking, safety. If this is, you're hoping to prevent some accidents and some things.
Yeah.
So I assume we track those, and hopefully we can see it, that maybe it really is something that has saved us some accidents in the future. So.
Yeah, we track all of those.
Yeah, we sure do. So anyway.
Well, you're better served being proactive.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah.
If it doesn't go right, the finger usually gets pointed back at us. Anything else? Okay. And I apologize. I know we're moving slower than normal, but no, it's all good stuff.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you, Johnny, for attending that, representing us as a cybersecurity. It was actually a tabletop exercise where they, talked about what happens when this goes down. What do you all do? And that's, I think, just important to do. So it's nice to have someone to share my nightmares with. Appreciate it. we want to talk too about a lot of the things we've been working on throughout the year. And one of the things that I'm really proud of, and the team is really proud of, is just bringing cybersecurity awareness and that kind of tech literacy to the culture, the everyday, things that we do. We use this technology. So just kind of bringing that to the forefront. One of the things we're using is something called HawksHunt, which is just it's this neat phishing simulation training platform. And it sort of gamifies the whole phishing training experience. So it'll send out these simulated emails, and if you report it phishing, you get these stars. And as you get more stars, you get a better and better and better shield. And it's kind of neat. They use this sort of gamification to encourage engagement, and it's really helping. And you can see here we have a leaderboard and the top 10 in the company. It's nice to see guys from all departments here, field, engineering, even some meter readers. But yeah, that's just one of those tools we've been using to bring that to the forefront. It uses something called micro training too, which is just a 2 to 3 minute training experience instead of this 20 minute or 10 minute even boring training, right? So it's nice. IT newsletter is something that we started last year, continue to do this year, and that is just a way that we bring everyone more tech advice, more cybersecurity news, and again, just bringing that to the forefront. Cybersecurity Awareness Month happens to fall in October, so that gives us an excuse to host a Halloween party. So we did that last year, a lot of fun, costumes, music, candy, some stuff that we've been working on this year to comply with new state requirements. The first one is Act 926 required us to move to a .gov from a .org. That was a kind of a tough thing to do, a heavy lift, but I'm happy to say that's complete. The deadline was June. We're ahead of that, so now we can focus on other things like the SCADA redeployment and stuff that we have on our plates. Act 848 required us to have a policy regarding artificial intelligence, and we just updated our existing technology use policy to include language for that. Some of the requirements were just having the policy about what resources you can use, and also make sure there's always human decision involved. There's no AI just making decisions for you. So we accomplished that. We actually rolled out that training, that policy, to the staff with HawksHunt. We learned that the state offers cybersecurity coverage to all government entities, and it covers us in the event of a cybersecurity event. So the only thing we had to do was some minimum security requirements to comply, and we took care of that. The final thing that we're working on, not quite complete yet, but coming soon, is ADA support on our website. So that is bringing some tools to help the vision impaired, hearing impaired on our website, and just creating elements that have this stuff kind of built in. You'll see soon, we expect this to be live probably the first week of April. There'll be a little kind of man at the bottom of our website. You can click on that and get all these tools you can use. But these are some kind of big boxes we've checked recently. And then finally, this is sort of a list of our projects that we have on our plate right now. The yellow ones are in progress and in keeping with trying to bring more education. We're looking at Microsoft training to train everyone on those Microsoft 365 tools that we already have and pay for. Really, the only thing that's keeping us from getting the full value is just the comfort level. So we're trying to remediate that. And that's it. Any questions? We're on that one. That one we don't like to talk about publicly.
Okay. All right. Do you have anything else?
No, that's it.
Thanks.
Well, I would say those are all great reports. We appreciate all the energy that goes into the preparation reports and the time. So thank you. Okay. Okay, let's move our old business move into new business. The first item under new business would be resolution 26-09. That's a resolution of doing a contract for Liquid Polymer to build the Rogers Pollution Control Facility and for other purposes.
This resolution would not basically be under the same agreement we have with it, just an extension for a year. Contract price per pound will remain the same.
Caladani.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries to approve resolution number 26-09. The next item would be resolution 26-10, and that is a resolution authorizing procurement of service providers for anticipated revenue bond issues, designating underwriting and auditing as professional services, waiving competitive bidding for trustee services, and for other purposes.
Yes, sir. I sent an email to our department heads earlier this afternoon announcing the kickoff of budget season for FY27.
I bet they're excited.
You know, hot off the presses. Maybe some of them haven't even seen it yet, so they're learning about it now, maybe. But. And no, FY27 starts July 1. We'll be working on our budget over the next couple of months. And as part of that, we anticipate at this point that we will need some additional funding in the sewer department in the form of additional long-term debt. We anticipate that for the sewer department, for water. We probably won't need it until FY28. But regardless, it's coming. And it's a process with multiple steps, and the first step is figuring out who to work with, and this lays the groundwork for that. So there are a number of services that that we may or may not need. Some of them we'll definitely need, and this allows us to start soliciting some qualifications for those services. So specifically, if we look at section number one here, this resolution designates bond underwriting services and auditing services for the anticipated bond issues, designating them as professional services. And because they're professional services, we would use a qualifications-based process to evaluate potential service providers and would not be using competitive bidding for those. Under section two there, you see that we plan to issue requests for qualifications for underwriting services. We could do it for auditing services and bond counsel and other professional services as needed. That same section allows us to contract with our existing auditor, Forbes Mazars, for the related auditing or accounting work that might be necessary as part of this process. Forbes Mazars recently went through an RFQ process for us, and the resolution that we adopted
hiring them basically allowed for other accounting services as well. This would fall into that scope. And then in section three there, it's addressing the bond trustee. Our existing bond covenants designate Regions as the bond trustee. We're working with Regions now. This is really just a matter of practicality to keep them and not introduce another trustee. We're getting good service from them. There's really no reason to switch. This would allow us to direct select Regions as our trustee for the anticipated revenue bond issues. And then finally, they're under section four, as necessary, if necessary, if we need to run by the city any of the service providers that we select in this process, we make allowance for that here through whatever means are warranted. But as I said, this just lays the groundwork for us soliciting those various services which we anticipate may be required for those revenue bonds beginning as early as FY27.
Okay. You have the explanation for Resolution 2016. I will entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries to approve Resolution 2016. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is Resolution 2611, and that is a resolution authorizing a contract for uniform rental services with waiving competitive bidding and for other purposes.
Commission, I'm here to represent 2611. In the past few years, we've seen consistent price increases from our current provider, Clean. That being said, as the prices have increased, we've seen a decline in service and quality to our uniforms. Based on the quality of the garment appreciated, our employees have lacked pride in wearing their uniform. And as our community grows, we want to grow with it, and we want our employees to feel pride in servicing our community. That being said, as our contract is going to expire in June 2026, we started reviewing alternatives, one being Vestas and one being Cintas. Based on that review, we found that we really prefer what Cintas was able to offer us as a uniform package and the service they were able to provide. The great news is that we brought those uniforms in, and we had our employees evaluating firsthand the people that are going to wear them in the field. They chose the uniform that I'm wearing in front of you today, the uniform that they want to have on. That represents what they do and the work that they do for our community. They chose it, and I guess the great news is that when we're comparing quotes, the price that we're currently paying is very comparable to what we're anticipating paying for Cintas. Based on those numbers, we do feel like the quote are early, but we are anticipating that the quote's going to be under the threshold that requires competitive bidding. But out of caution, we wanted to bring it to the commission today to authorize us to waive competitive bidding, because there is an alternative that we're interested in. We want to see contract with Cintas for everything they're able to offer us. That being said, Rogers, the team requests authorization to pass Resolution 2611 and allow us to negotiate contract with Cintas and waive competitive bidding if needed, but we're anticipating it's not. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Yeah.
Okay. That's great. We have a recommendation.
I would say I love the change that we've seen in professionalization. And I know that it is right around. These guys are everywhere. I really love it. I love the vests and how good they look. So I'll make a motion.
Motion.
Second.
Motion second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you.
That's great.
The motion that carries to approve Resolution 2611. The last item we have on our agenda would be design contract amendment for Highway 12, water main.
Yes, if you recall, last month we approved the award of the bid for the Highway 12. A water line replacement to Boyle's Construction. Tim Mays with BSI presented those bid results. This is an engineering services amendment to allow us to retain engineering services at ESI for
construction administration and inspection. This construction contract has a duration of 270 days, and so this would allow for ESI's representative to be on site on a daily basis to check on the progress of the work, provide survey control, provide any engineering services during construction, and provide record drawings. And so staff would recommend approval of the amendment number one to the engineering agreement with ESI for the Highway 12 waterline project at an hourly rate with a total cost not to exceed $142,000, and allow staff to negotiate the final form and content of the amendment. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
We have a staff recommendation, and I would entertain a motion.
When is this set to start?
It's likely to start in April. I think we're just waiting on getting the bonds.
Okay. I'll make a motion to approve.
We have a motion.
Second.
Any further discussion, questions, comments? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, that concludes the items of new business.
And the only thing I'm just going to make just a comment for the housekeeping for next month. So as the chairperson, I guess the bylaws can serve for 2 years. And my 2 years is coming up May the 2nd. So just want to kind of throw that out there. So at the end of the April meeting, we anticipate that we would need to have a new chairperson who then would convene and conduct the May meeting. So just want to put that out. Y'all be thinking about that. But at our meeting, our April meeting, we will need to go ahead and be looking at a new chairperson to head up beginning in the May meeting. So with that, just be thinking about that. And any other business there? Well, from apologize, I know we'll run a little bit longer. I know that y'all told him we'd be done by 5, and it's all good reports today. We appreciate that. And welcome to the commission.
Thank you.
With that, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
A motion second. We are adjourned. Thank you all.